Here are this week's top stories. Some members of the AMS Council are steaming after $9,055 was taken from a non-replenishable fund for lobby days, an event where dozens of councillors traveled to Victoria to meet with politicians. While some councillors were not only upset about the cost of the event, most were upset that the money wasn't taken from the fund used specifically for lobbying the government. Angry councillors said that some of the line items of the budget were unnecessary, such as $2,500 for accommodation at the Grand Hotel and $1,970 for a minivan rental. Other councillors said that the money was not enough and that more funding should be put into lobbying initiatives.
After years of waiting, a full-service grocery has made its way to campus. The new Save on Foods opened September 2nd and is located in the new Market Housing Development at Westbrook Mall and 16th Avenue. Andrea Morgan, president of Friends of the UBC Farm, said that there is room for a possible relationship with the new Save on Foods. The store offers over 200 ready-to-go meal solutions and a large selection of organic products to cater to students.
The UBC Chinese Varsity Club, or CVC, is working on a new promotional video to rebrand the club as a culturally inclusive and community-minded organization. President Eric Chan said that the CVC is trying to shake off the backlash they received for the controversial video last year that depicted stereotypical Chinese individuals with thick accents.
On the eve of a possible fall election, Jack Layden visited UBC last week at the start of a cross-country campus tour. In a town hall-style meeting assembly at the Student Union Building party room, he fielded questions from students on a myriad of topics, ranging from Canada's presence in Afghanistan to youth unemployment to Arctic sovereignty. Layden then spent the entire day at UBC. After speaking with students, he worked out in the bird coop and then had beers in the gallery.
A reception on September 9th marked the launch, or rather relaunch, of the UBC Medical Journal, UBCMJ, a student-run and written academic journal. Student contributors numbered near 100, providing artwork as well as articles and people power. Contributions came from all three of UBC's medical branches, UNBC in Prince George, UVic, and Vancouver. Though the first issue was offered as a paper-based journal as well as online, the UBCMJ will focus on becoming an online-based publication posted twice a year at ubcmj.com.
Hundreds of concerned Vancouverites massed in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery on a drizzly afternoon last Wednesday to protest recently announced funding cuts to arts and culture organizations. These cuts will see funding for arts programs slashed from $19.5 million down to $2.25 million by the provincial government. Art students from Langara College were given the day off to attend the rally as well.
The Vancouver Canucks rookie camp took place at the Doug Mitchell Thunderbird Winter Sports Center last week. Fans came out to see prospective NHL players train and run drills.
UBC's plans to build the St. John Hospice, a center dedicated to end-of-life, or palliative, care on campus, has been met with some resistance due to its proposed location near first-year residents Blas Vanier. The proposed plan would see the hospice built behind St. John's College, a graduate residential college, and 400 meters away from Blas Vanier. The proposal goes to Board 1 level of approval this Thursday, which means approval of the plan in principle. AMS VP Academic Johannes Urbani encouraged any students with concerns to speak out by joining a Facebook group and by contacting the Student Board of Governors representatives. We're now joined with Jeff Costello, a student senator and one of the students who has been organizing opposition to the proposal. Jeff, thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot, Justin.
So, can you tell all of us how this proposal has gotten this far without students knowing much about it?
Well, a couple months ago, the proposal went through CCP, which is Campus and Community Planning, and it's one of the bodies that kind of organizes a lot of the different groups that want to build things on campus and goes through them. St. John's, I believe, was the group that put forward the proposal for the hospice or the palliative care center, and it was accepted in principle by the CPP pending approval by the Board of Governors, which actually, I made a mistake, won't be happening on Thursday, but it will be happening in the next month or two.
Okay. So what the Board of Governors and Campus and Community Planning are saying to this, Jeff, is that the hospice is 400 meters away from Vanier. It's in a relatively secluded area, even besides this, and that there's a way that this can work and this care center and students can coexist without any real problems. Do you buy that, essentially?
I think that it makes sense to some extent. I mean, they haven't asked for a completely quiet neighborhood, and they do want to be part of the campus community, which is part, I think, something that students do want, is that it brings a lot of opportunities for students in medical research, things like that, to our campus. But what we need to make sure is that we have a cohesive neighborhood and sites that work well together. And they're saying they're going to work with architecture and things to minimize noise and do all that. And I guess the question that a lot of students have, from what I've been hearing is that why would you risk putting it so close to a first-year residence as well as a graduate residence when there's eight other sites that have been offered in other places, whether it's down farther on South Campus near the football fields, up near Chancellor Boulevard across from the Chan Center. I mean, these are other sites that are also being proposed. And so the question for me is why so close to our first-year residence when you do have that risk of conflict?
Right. Now, how exactly can students get involved in voicing their opposition here?
Well, the best way to find out more information is to go on Facebook and search UBC Hospice as groups, and you can join the group and you can stay informed on all the information. The other good things you can do is to show up to as many campus and community planning information sessions that you can find. And I'll be keeping posting on the Facebook group where those are happening, when they are, so we can get as many students out and we can have a really good discussion about the pros and cons of bringing this hospice to campus.
All right, Jeff, thanks for stopping by and telling us.
Thanks
about
a lot,
this.
Justin.
All right, and that's it for the UBC Front Page podcast this week. For Paul Bucci, I'm Justin McElroy. Thanks very much.
Thanks, guys. To continue our campus coverage, here's a story from Janelle Chung, who this week had a chance to speak with student representatives regarding the Center for Student Involvement currently being built at Brock Hall.
We're here with Angeli De La Rosa from UBC Orientations, Rob Winston from SLC Planning Committee, and the Ambassador for Peer Programs, Jeff Cox. Thanks for coming, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Jeff, can you tell us more about Peer Programs and what they do?
Sure. So Peer Programs is sort of a collective organization that embodies sort of 13 different programs on campus. The similarity between all of them is focusing on peer-oriented learning and mentoring. And so there are, like I mentioned, 13. Some of them that you might know are programs like the arts team or the engineering team or the science team, and probably other programs like Go Global or Wellness Peer Educators. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the programs. I mentioned that there was 13, but again, the sort of encompassing idea is that everyone shares the peer-oriented approach to sort of learning and mentoring.
So what are some events that Peer Programs have been responsible for that our listeners might be able to recognize?
Yeah, so I mentioned that Peer Programs is sort of an umbrella program that encompasses many different programs. So some of the events that the different programs have put on, for instance, SciTeam, as you might know, puts on the Get Into Research event that happens every year. And as well, the Wellness Peer Educators through the Wellness Center sort of function to put on the Wellness Fair, which is sort of an annual fair that happens every year that focuses on health and wellness. And this year will be happening in November to focus on mental health. So those are just a couple, but again, there's 13 programs that do put on different events.
Since there are so many programs and students are involved with it, there are a lot of new changes and improvements happening different from previous years. Most notably is the Center for Student Involvement being built at Brock Hall. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely over the last year, as I mentioned, there are 13 different programs, and the approach that we've been using in the last couple of years is sort of to coordinate everyone and get everyone together on the same page within peer programs. So we have grown, and we are sort of a lot bigger than we were 2 years ago. We do have 290 students that function within peer programs. And as you mentioned, the Center for Student Involvement will be sort of built within the next month. We have a construction deadline of September 30th for the construction to be complete. But there will also be other students that are able to sort of function in the space, as well as we've mentioned orientations and the SLC Student Leadership Conference. So I guess at the end of the day, there'll probably be definitely over 400 students that do have access to the space in terms of affiliation with the different programs that are involved in student development in general.
How did it come about? Were students wanting an extra communal space?
Yeah, so it was sort of the approach that sort of came to be in sort of in terms of the Center for Student Involvement is that there are all these different programs that are happening on campus already, and they're a little bit scattered in terms of where students are working sort of to make the programs happen. So the idea was just that, you know, the space was needed as a central location for these students to work and to use more resources and sort of get together and get connected. So it was a much needed space, and it sort of just came to be through student development and the need by students to use a space.
Rob, for the Student Leadership Conference, how are you planning to use the space?
Well, we use the space at the moment within the student space in student development, and I think it's really a working space to not only get the work within your conference done, but I think to create meaningful relationships with people from peer programs, with the orientations team. In a sense, it's a more horizontal working environment where we can share ideas and really gain the most from the students around us.
So is there a specific area for different groups, or do they just come in and it's kind of a communal work area?
there are communal working spaces. There are boardrooms and tables in which people can meet. But I think it's the idea behind it is to create an open plan environment in which people can work together, in which people can share ideas and share resources, because I think that's the way we can move forward as students.
And orientation, how are you planning to use this space?
Currently, our space is actually just around the corner from CITR. We're currently renting a space from the AMS services area up here in the second floor of the sub. When the space, the Center for Student Development, opens, we will be moving our main office, our workspaces. We have a number of student staff working with orientations as well as a couple of full-time staff. And so we will be working out of the center when it opens.
So speaking of more student involvement, obviously the center is a big deal in that. There's also going to be a website that's about to be launched. Can you speak more about that?
Yeah, sure. So we sort of talked about the Center for Student Involvement as being a physical hub for involvement and leadership on campus, but at the same time we do recognize that sort of as the years go on and technology becomes more integrated into our society, that students are going online to find out more about what's available to them on campus in terms of opportunities. So we're definitely aiming to build a virtual resource. So it's under construction. We do have a website. We don't have a URL right at this moment, but we definitely have a student and a staff team working in collaboration with communication services to sort of get it up and running for when the physical space is open.
So you're planning the website to be launched around September, the end of September?
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, I mean, we don't have specific target dates at this moment, but definitely between late September or mid-October, we expect that virtual space to be up and running.
For extended interviews with Student Leadership Committee Representative Rob Winston and Jella De La Rosa from UBC Orientations, check out our website at www.citr.ca. It's now time for a break, but stay tuned. Up next, we bring you Word on the Street, Student Perspectives on Transit, and an interview with an activist from the One Pass Now movement calling for the universalization of the U-Pass.
The AMS Speakeasy provides information, peer counseling, and crisis support to the UBC community. Speakeasy volunteers are carefully chosen and trained to assist students in dealing with a wide range of issues, including relationship breakups, substance abuse, sexuality, and exam stress. To access our service for information or counseling, drop in to visit our desk on the north side of the sub concourse. All drop-ins and call-ins are strictly confidential. We also have an online email referral service. If we can't help you, we can refer you to someone who can.
What happens when you mix this? With this. You get the slew. Kid Koala and Dynamite D with the former rhythm section of Wolfmother, featuring drums, bass, keys, and the DJs working across a truly excessive 6 turntables. The set is 70 minutes of raw guitar cuts and heavy beats. We can guarantee that you will never have heard anything quite like this, and also that you are unlikely to again. It's a one-off tour, so when it stops in your town, you'll either be there or you'll have missed it forever. The Slew, September 23rd, with special guest, with Adira Omron at the Commodore Ballroom. Brash, loud, and defiantly turned up to 11. The Slew Tour is coming to Vancouver. Don't miss it.
Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds.
Welcome back. You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. Transit is always a hot topic, especially in the age of rising gas prices and shrinking student budgets. For a look at student perspectives on transit, here's Word on the Street, opinions gathered by Brad Pepink, Emily McPadden, and Richard Kemick.
Thanks, Carrie. Today, Emily and I had the opportunity to speak to a few UBC students about the Vancouver transit system as a whole. And what did you think, Emily? What was the overall reaction?
I think students were generally very positive about it, and also definitely had some interesting comments to make. For example, this is what Mike and Jeannie had to say.
I'm here in the Student Union building with Jeannie and Mike, who have a couple comments on the transit system in Vancouver. Let's hear what they have to say.
Well, I think the UPass system is really great that we can use the transit system really cheap. But then the thing is that we pay for it automatically, and it's kind of unfair for those people who do not really use transit system. Let's say people who live around the campus and who doesn't really go out that much. So I like the purpose of the system, except I don't like that we have to buy it automatically. Like, we have to buy it. So
thank you. That's awesome. Mike, what did you have to say?
Similar opinion as Jeannie. I mean, it is great that you know, UBC is helping the students with the who already have a problem with, like, a lot of financial issues already, right, with the heavy tuition and everything. But it is also true that, like, some students who drive, they don't usually use the UPass, right? And it's kind of promoting the way that, you know, those people will probably sell their UPass to make more money off it. And I've seen a lot of people do that, too. So I guess that's something they could try and work on, maybe.
Thanks very much, guys. That's very insightful.
And then I also spoke to Tracy today, who actually doesn't use the transit system, but still had some comments to make. This is what she said.
I'm here outside the Student Union building with Tracy, who does not use the transit system. Tell us why, Tracy.
Well, mainly I use my bicycle to get myself around the city, even up the hills, and despite the rain, I find it's the best way for me to travel. It's actually quicker than most of the bus routes, and I find it's a good way to clear my head and start the day.
And finally, Richard, who made this glowing commentary of our transit system.
I'm here with Richard outside the Student Union building, who is a transferred student from the University of Lethbridge. Richard, what are your thoughts on the UPass, and how does it compare to the transit system as it was in Lethbridge?
I think it's just absolute leaps and bounds ahead. In Lethbridge, there was no student UPass. You just had to pay the adult price for a bus pass, which was robbery and extortion. And here, I think it's a fantastic deal. I went to the ferry the other day and took the SkyTrain, and it was all covered. It's great. I'm really happy with it so far.
That's excellent. Thank you, Richard. And so if you could make any improvements to the transit system here in Vancouver, do you have anything to suggest or no?
I would say late at night it would be better if there were a few more buses. They going to and from the university, especially Friday, Saturday night specifically, they seem to get few and far between after midnight.
Thank you very much, Richard.
And then we had the opportunity to speak to a few UBC students about the proposed OnePass system, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program. But basically, it's just a system where all Vancouver area students will have the same type of UPass that Vancouver UBC students have. And here's what a few students had to say. We're in the Student Union building with Alex, and I just wanted to ask you, how do you feel about the UPass?
I'm a big supporter of the UPass. I use it every day. I think it's a great idea. As a former student of both Capilano College and Emily Carr, I could say that both of those post-secondary institutions could do with something of equivalent value to the UPass. It would definitely be, I think a lot of students would really appreciate that.
I'm here with Danielle outside the Student Union building. Danielle, I'm just wondering if you have any comments about the Vancouver transit system or potentially the UPass.
I think Vancouver has probably one of the best transit systems in any city. I just lived in Australia for the last 6 months, and there, every city I went to had a transit system that was nowhere near as good as Vancouver. And the UPass is amazing. It's such an awesome thing. At the university that I went to there, every student had to pay every time they went on the bus, and I think that the UPass is something that should be used by every student, and it is used by every student, and it's an awesome thing to have, absolutely.
Thank you so much. So that sounds like maybe then you would be in favor of the OnePass, which is a proposed similar thing to the UPass, only for every student in the Vancouver area. What do you think of that idea?
I think it'd be great. I mean, it's a great way to connect and use Vancouver Transit and see the sights that Vancouver has to offer.
Thanks so much, Danielle.
And that was Streeters for September the 14th. Thanks, guys, and thanks to you, Carrie.
Thanks. Although UBC students may take it for granted, the UPass continues to be an object of contention at other colleges and universities. Here now we bring you an interview with Nimi Tekkar, a student at Douglas College and activist with the One Pass Now movement, which is pushing for the universalization of the UPass. First, Nimi explained the current bus pass system.
SFU and UBC pay approximately $25 for a monthly UPass, whereas students who are going to other post-secondary institutions, such as Emily Carr University, Vancouver Community College, and Douglas College, pay for a monthly transit pass, which allows them to ride three zones, and they pay $73. But with TransLink's recent hike, they'll actually be paying $81 a month. So UBC students and SFU students pay about $25 a month, and students at DCC, Emily Carr, and Douglas College are going to be paying $81 a month.
Can you explain why this discrepancy exists now? Has TransLink provided any explanation of why other colleges aren't given the same deal as SFU and UBC students?
So the TransLink is in their UPass program. So these three colleges are excluded from the UPass program. And when we tried to negotiate with TransLink to be a part of the program, they use a methodology called revenue neutral, which we have done extensive research on and found that really we don't know what it means, and that revenue neutral seems to mean something different at each school. This illogical and revenue neutral policy is what TransLink claims is the reason that there's such a discrepancy between prices.
Okay, and so what are you pushing for through the One Pass Now initiative?
So the One Pass Now initiative is very simple. We're asking for a $25 UPass for all post-secondary students in Metro Vancouver.
And can you describe what you've been doing to push for this and talk maybe a little bit about the rally you held yesterday?
Absolutely. So far, our campaign was really pushed forward by a lack of any commitment shown from the current provincial government, as they promised us UPass in the last election in their platform. We were hoping that come September that we would all start off with a UPass. Since this didn't happen, students needed to organize, so we organized the campaign launch for One Pass Now, and yesterday we had a very successful launch at Douglas campus where number of students came. There was probably over 150 students in and out at different times coming in to express how much they need a UPass just at Douglas campus and we were only in there for maybe an hour. So,
and you've also partnered with, I know, the UBC Student Union. I don't know about the SFU Student Union, but you're working on this together. What's motivating UBC if they already have a UPass?
I think this campaign is more than just about having a UPass. It's about equity and fairness for students. I think that the UBC Alma Mater Society recognizes the discrimination that's happening against these smaller schools, and so I think they're fighting for a progressive cause, not just the actual UPass. So even though UBC students have a $25 UPass, I think that they're fighting for equality and fairness for all students.
How hopeful are you that this campaign will affect change?
I'm very hopeful. I think that the students are the one demographic that'll change the minds of our current government, and that should change the minds of our current government.
And so if people do want to get involved in this campaign, do want to push for a universal UPass for all post-secondary students, how can they get involved?
You can come to log on to our website at www.onepassnow.ca. You can join our Facebook group and just contact us through the website. This is an easy win for the provincial government at a time when things aren't looking so hot to do something that maybe is going to get them a hooray. Like, they promised it. It was a great commitment. We were so excited that student issues were a part of this government's agenda. And so it's an easy one, Premier Campbell. Do your thing.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much, Megan.
Okay, bye.
We're now going to take a quick break, but stay tuned. Weather is next. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR podcast update number one.
Work has begun on Canada's information highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want, on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit citr.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
On September 18th and 19th, this year's 9th annual New Forms Festival brings together artists from a variety of creative sectors, including electronic music, visual arts, and technology-based installations. Top DJs from around the globe will perform alongside innovative visuals and installations. Additionally, a partnership with the new W2 Community Media Arts Center allows attendees to attend a full-day VJ workshop to learn some of the skills that will be displayed during the festival. Information can be found on www.newformsfestival.com or follow New Forms Fest on Twitter for regular updates.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the pop underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Clem from White Cowbell, Oklahoma, and baby, don't touch that dial, because you got it locked on CITR.
Welcome back to News 101. Right now, it's just about 5:30, and that means it's time for the weather. And for that, we go to Alice Wong. Alice?
Thanks, Carrie. Here's your week's forecast for September 14th through September 18th. It will stay sunny and mild with seasonal temperatures for most of this week. We won't see a whole lot of action until Wednesday evening when a weak low-pressure system passes through the southern BC coast. Here's your forecast. Monday evening to the overnight, a mix of cloud and clear skies, low of 12. Tuesday, sunny with cloudy periods, high of 22 degrees. Wednesday starts off with a mix of sun and cloud. Then there's increasing cloudiness by the afternoon with a daytime high of 22. Rain will likely start falling during the Wednesday evening and overnight hours as a low-pressure system passes through and weakens. Thursday, we're back to sunny conditions with cloudy periods, high of 20. Friday morning, it will be a mix of sun and cloud. Currently, it's 20 degrees and partly cloudy at YVR. That's your weather this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. For News 101, I'm Alice Wong.
And that's our program for September 14th, 2009. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Friday at 5 for another edition of News 101. I'm Carrie Baptist. For the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track with Phil. This is CITR 101.9 FM.